my family has, my side of the family has unusual experiences.
Oh, yeah.
So, I asked one of my sisters, they're all dead. Two sisters I had, one half-sister and one real sister, and four brothers.
Yeah.
I asked my sister, where did disability come from?
Yeah.
We seem to have a sixth sense. Not me as much as my children have.
Mm-hmm.
And two of my daughters, I have six daughters and two of my own sons.
Yeah.
The six daughters, out of the six of them, two have ability to see things that we do not see.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, spontaneous, though they say that. And a lot of unusual experiences we have, my family members and I. So I made it a point to put them down, scribble or diary or
yeah.
So I write stories of what
Now you said that in this one case your daughter helped you with the spelling.
Yeah.
The second book I realized was edited by Lee Marigold.
Yes.
How much editing was done there? Or what did
just
she do?
Just everything, just the way it is.
Okay.
This
so she basically
one,
just
yeah.
wrote the introduction then. Huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It left everything.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing on this book, I think, that was the only different, the only correction we made was about my brother. Roddy died. Roddy disappeared. Huh?
Yeah.
So I wrote the
mm-hmm.
disappearance of Roddy. But just like that, the publisher phoned me and said the book is going into print,
mm-hmm.
First draft. So I told her, hold on to that Roddy poem, because Roddy has, I think he has been found. Right at that time she phoned me for something.
Yeah.
And Roddy was found. He had just come from PEI. My husband and I were in PEI, and in 88, and we were there, and it was in August, early part of August, and I was speaking there, you know, in front of people, and we were staying at this farm with a famous poet from PEI. I forget
mm-hmm.
his name, he's a famous poet there, he died, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So we were staying with at his sister's farm, and tomorrow I'm going to speak. That night I had a strange dream about, I saw a skeleton in the dream. There was sand blown away from the skeleton, sand, I could see it, some blown on and some blown off. And I could see a rag, like a coat that was all
mm-hmm.
rotted away.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody in the dream told me to step over and identify the skeleton. Step over here and identify. And then in the dream I did not want to step over the skeleton, but
mm-hmm.
I went around.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see the skeleton. In the morning I told my husband, oh my God, I had the weird thing. I said, turn about a skeleton on and there was sand blowing away. Ah, he said, it must be the fire. Maybe somebody buried here, you know, joking around. Huh? And we thought no more of it. But that morning he took me over to the publisher. And we had to look through the, have a discussion of some of the, and the book is, she's sitting alongside of me there, and so she opens the book, right away, just like that, any old page, mm-hmm. Yeah? And the Roddy song, and one of them, that was Roddy, that's the guy that's...
Yeah, yeah.
So, I got all goosebumps all over him.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to say anything to her because she'd mm-hmm. think I'm weird, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I got all goosebumps and I looked at the poem. I said, oh, you think that's okay, the Roddy song? She said, yes. You're obviously talking about a mentally disturbed person.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I said, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, that's important.
Mm-hmm.
It's important in the book. And I had not known that Roddy was found yet.
Mm-hmm.
He won't be found out here tomorrow. So he disappeared in 1980.
Yeah.
This was in 88. So I'm talking to her, and we're talking away about others. And she said, this Indian song, she said, that's going to stay exactly the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
I said, is there anything in the book that you...
Mm-hmm.
that I should work over, or,
mm-hmm.
you know? She said, no, everything is just the way it is. I want it the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing. So I said...
Was that Lee Marinko?
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
I
mean,
no,
you
the
were
publisher,
talking...
Publisher,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not a publisher anymore. It's a different woman now.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the one that gave the book, the manuscript. The first time when I gave her the manuscript, she showed it to me, Marisol,
mm-hmm.
and they were at a publishing place somewhere in Ontario.
In Vancouver.
So
mm-hmm.
she showed the manuscript to that woman. She said she heard her. She had the manuscript with her. She was going to have a discussion about, you know, workshop.
Mm-hmm.
She was going to discuss about this Indian woman
mm-hmm.
work. So she said that's why I had the manuscript with me. But she said she happened to meet Lee Marinko. So she, Indian, you
mm-hmm.
know. And right away she said, there's something I want you to see.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he said, I'll send you the Lee Marinko, of course,
mm-hmm.
you saw it or imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And the way a publisher put it, she said, I think another Indian should edit another Indian's work.
I think so.
That's the way she looked at it, huh? So I was surprised, you know, and I received a letter from Leah. And in the letter she says, I loved your work.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, someday I hope to we meet and, you know, talk. And I thought that was so great, another Indian somewhere
mm-hmm.
else, you know, like in my work. And she's a journalist.
Yeah.
Lee, is there?
Yeah, I know her.
Mm-hmm.
And
so I thought that was great. And she had no, she didn't even, nothing had to be corrected.
Mm-hmm.
Not my spelling, my English,
mm-hmm.
nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They just wanted the
mm-hmm.
way it was, and I thought that was great. This one needed a lot of house cleaning.
Did it?
Yeah. When the manuscript won that time, Writers' Federation assigned Chipman Hall. I don't know if you know Chipman Hall. Chipman Hall in 1974 was award-winning author of
mm-hmm.
this book.
Mm-hmm.
And Chipman and I got together and discussed, and Chipman would say, oh, Indians never did that. You know, he would say something, Indians never did that.
Was he Indian, though, huh?
No.
Mm.
And I said, what made you think we didn't do that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he said, I studied Indian for 7 years. That's when I told him, damn it, I lived through that. Don't question me, Chipman, and I would tell him, that stays just the way it is, something, I would say something. And he would want me to say it another way. No, that stays, that stays just what I, my own thoughts, I wanted them there, and I didn't care who wanted them. was found up.
Yeah. You said that was the day after, huh?
Yeah, day after. I did not know he was found. Evelyn here came in and she said, a body has been found on Sky Mountain. Mom, she said it might
be
Roddy.
Where is Sky Mountain?
Sky Mountain is in Waikaguma,
mm-hmm.
where Roddy last disappeared. And so I called the RCMP and I asked the RCMP, you know,
mm-hmm.
seen it 5,000. I told him, is it possible that might be my brother?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a further investigation. So I said, will you please tell the Bedeck police if it is,
mm-hmm.
You know, make sure. You know, I'm the only living
relative
that was
mm-hmm.
left, so I had to get the identifying mark. So. But Roddy had a plate when he was in the war. Or
mm-hmm.
he had a plate here, Parsons plate, and a plate on the head. Right hip was a pin,
mm-hmm.
pin in the right hip. And he was small build.
Mm-hmm. Walked with
a severe limp.
Was that from the war?
Yeah. So. Yeah, most of that. And he got hit by a car at that time when he was up in Boston. He got hit. So that hip always gave him a problem, you know, and a war injury. And one of the eyes was like mine too, blind. And
Were you born with a blind eye?
Mm-hmm. My sister used to tell me, doctor used to come when
mm-hmm.
I was small and put medicine on my eye. When I was a little baby, put
mm-hmm.
medicine on my eye. Oh, they were awful.
Mm-hmm.
She said, my sister used to say, we thought you were going to be completely
mm-hmm.
blind.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as I grew up, Indian medicine, I imagine, they
mm-hmm.
put, I have... But this one is blind.
Mm-hmm.
I can see, just barely see. I think if this one went,
mm-hmm.
I would, if I had to rely on that,
mm-hmm.
I would see light in there or
mm-hmm.
shapes. I, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is very nearsighted. That's why when I read,
mm-hmm.
When I read sometimes blurry, so I usually take
mm-hmm.
off my glasses
mm-hmm.
and that's how nearsighted I am right here. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
My husband loves this one here. Tears fall on the empty page.
Mm-hmm.
My thoughts wound in the heart. The bended wish unheard in the night. For soul searching in darkness black, what will I write? I have nothing to fall back on, no wrongs I care to cleanse. The engraved yesterday's not anymore, or modernism I care to represent. My revolt in dying embers, peace or my mission I awaken. He loved that. And there were some of them that he,
mm-hmm.
oh, read it again. And you would tell me, moved
mm-hmm.
him, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And, or them. There's some of them that, I know this one moves a lot of people, not necessarily Indian. Though it was natural for me to create my life
mm-hmm.
to peace and for my orientation, you know. It moves people. They say it makes them feel good too,
mm-hmm.
even the non-Indian. Huh? Just... Knock, knock, knock. And one of the daughters coming. Oh, hello!
Hello! Rita, I was wondering if your workshop is open, your gift shop. Christa?
Yes. Evelyn, you will look after me because Dooney. There's some, what is it you want?
I'm just looking for some jewelry, you know, beadwork.
My room. There's a basket full of jewelry.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I'll have a look at that too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, bring it out, Evelyn. Bring it out.
I switched this off and you can...
It was different. So I I told her, hold on, so don't put that in there. That one it was different. It was the loss. I was all talking about all the loss that I felt. So I said, remove that and I'll write another one. And I wrote that in about half hour, you know. Mm-hmm. I just told what I felt. And it, coming home and then the police calling me later. And I said, I'm pretty sure that's Roddy. So I told the policeman about my dream.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you don't rely on police, nothing, the police investigation.
Not in the RCMP, no.
But he said, it is possible because nobody has disappeared the last 20 years in Cape Breton.
Mm-hmm.
No man, and it appears to be a man.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, that's possibly that's your brother. But how did he get up there? He was very, he walked with a severe limp.
Mm-hmm.
And I told the police that part. And he had cashed a $900 check that day, and no money was found on him, only a few pennies in the inside pocket. You know, in here, West Coast. That's all there was. I asked him about any money was found. He said no money was found on him. But he might have hid it because he was having problem that day. They saw him going into the water up to his here, and some men coming off work 5 o'clock. One of them was our nephew.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And he saw Roddy going in to the water up to his armpits, and Roddy said in Micmac, "What are you doing in the water?"
Mm-hmm.
And he hollered back at the white men that are chasing me. It's like a war.
So he was in the war.
So they told him come out. They simply told him come out. And one of our nephews took him home and told him to get into dry clothes and that he would come to the house for supper or something like that. Told mm-hmm. him, huh? So he lived just across the road from the nephew, and he said, my nephew said after, I saw him walking on the road, going towards the church.
Mm.
So he didn't think nothing of it. He thought, you know, he's going to come back later for supper. Mm-hmm. And he said, I saw him walking down the road. He went into the church, and he brought out the bell.
Mm-hmm.
And he had put Kleenex inside the bell.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed it to the woman. He said, he told the woman next door, I have to put this inside of the bell because every time this bell rings, a person dies in our community. That's what he told the woman. The woman looked at him. She said, in Mi'kmaq, she said, Roddy, are you crazy?
Mm-hmm.
He just laughed at her. He left it. So put that bill back into the church like that.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, I looked out and he took it, went into the church, he put it inside mm-hmm. of the church. And somebody hadn't met him. Some men were working in the church. They saw him going in first time, taking the bell with him, and they were curious, but they didn't say nothing to him.
Mm-hmm.
They saw him bring the bell back in, they saw him place it where it was before, but when he left the church, he walked backwards like that,
mm-hmm.
all the way to the door, and then left like that. And another brother saw him walking. He said, I was reading the newspaper near my picture window like this, and saw him walking by, limping, you know, walking by. And he hollered out, Roddy, I'm in here. Like that. Charlie is the other one. And Roddy didn't come in. So my little brother, Charlie, looked out, you know, looking around for Roddy, never saw him. But Charlie explained to me, when Roddy disappeared, that possibly it was not the real Roddy, but the spirit of Roddy that I saw. So we didn't know. But he disappeared, and people were looking for him on a boat.
Did he act like that before?
About a year before that, he forgot his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he was taken to Nova Scotia Hospital, and he was in there. But I spoke to him the next day at the mm-hmm. hospital. My husband and I went to see him. We heard something sick. We heard Roddy was sick, and we went to the hospital to see him. And he was all right. He was normal. So my husband told him, what is your name? He said, Roderick Patrick Bernard. How old are you? Like that.
Mm-hmm.
57, he said. He looked at my husband, why you ask? And my husband told him, no, we just wondered what was wrong with you yesterday. He said, I don't know. I just didn't know. I don't know. He didn't remember what happened yesterday. So I imagine that was the start of the problem. But he was normal. He went to the hospital, and I did not like what, when we went to visit him 3 months later, I saw one of the doctors shaking his finger at Roddy. Do not drink anymore, do not touch liquor anymore. But the way he was doing it, I told my husband, Roddy may have been hypnotized. You know, the shaking finger, don't do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Roddy was looking at the doctor so scared. No, I will not drink again.
Mm.
I the frightened look, puppy dog look. I pitied him that time. And I hugged him and I told him, you'll be all right. So he came home about 2 weeks after that, and he was all right for a whole year until that time. And we still don't know today what happened, but he was found on top. When he disappeared, the elderly people told the searchers, Roddy will not go up because he's lame. He will go straight or downhill because he's, the spear limp. And do not look for him up there. Look for him, level or down to below. They look for him in water, all over. There were a lot of searchers there, but they never found him. And he was accidentally found 8 years later by silviculture workers. This guy was sitting down eating, and peeling orange, and he went like that, and threw peelings. He saw this body in the grass, in the tall grass. And I had gone to a psychic a few months after he disappeared. I couldn't, last resort, I went to a psychic, and me and my husband, was cynical about psychics, so he gave us tea, and he told my husband, turn your cup around a couple of times and give it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew why that was. Psychics get an impression after you touch something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where they pick up the impressions. Mm-hmm. I knew that. My husband didn't know. But he did it in the end. I was watching. Because I was cynical of the critical. I was, I didn't believe the guy, So when the minute he handed, my husband never said anything.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute he handed him the cup and saucer, the man told him, right away he told Frank, the man you are looking for will never be found, will not be found alive. That's the way that was for his first words.
Mm-hmm.
And I just looked at him, how did he know what we were there for, And so he talked to my husband.
Oh, so you hadn't told him?
No, we hadn't told him anything yet. Mm-hmm. So he told my husband a lot of things. My husband just looked at him. Big eyes. And when it finally turned to me, so I did, he didn't even have to tell me. I did the same thing, and I handed him my cup. And I never spoke. I never spoke, not one word, because I was too critical of the man. I wanted to judge him if he was real. So he looks at me right away, and he says, what are you doing in 12 by 15 room? And there is a window there, and a broom, and he was naming the things in the room. What are you doing? And it's a little dark. What are you doing in that room? Registered. I am 12 years old and I am being punished. I'm in a broom closet at residential school. I recognized what he was telling me. I said to myself, how in the world did this guy know what I had been punished when I was 12? You know, I never met him before. So, and then a few other things. He's back in my, when I was smaller, when I was a teenager, he said these things out of the blue. And, you know, questioned me about them, and I, that's when I believed him. He knew I was critical. He knew, he knew, he felt it. So I began to feel a little more good towards him. So he looked at me and he said, when you are writing, don't think back on the past. Write what you did today. And I had not told him I was a writer. Another thing. He said, when you write, write about what is happening today, not yesterday. Don't cry about yesterday, he said. That's what he told me. Oh, God, I just sat there and I never, you know, I never, and and he told me that, man, you are looking, he got hurt right here. Right there. And that's what he told my husband. He got hurt right there and he fell down. And he got up again. He walked and he got up again. He fell down, he got up again. The second time he did not get up. And he fell in like a hollow. Like a hollow. Indentation in the ground. That's where he is. And then but he said he will not be found. And you know, I told my husband when we're driving home, and I told my husband, did you believe that guy? He said, I don't know. What do you think? But I said, some of the things he told me was nobody knew, not even knew. He said, me too. Some of the things he told me, he said, I have not brought them up with anybody. Well, I said, here we were trying to think, maybe he did research on us. How could he do a research on us when he never met us before? So we kind of believed him, huh? So I said, well, Roddy will not be found, he said. And he was not found till 8 years later. That man died. We found out he died, that I asked about him. And when he told me that time, that's when I, from now on, when my writings would be about today, this man has given me direction. He doesn't know who I am, but he's given me. So I made a promise to myself, I will write about what's today. Don't cry about the past. Always write. And I try to tell the Indian
writers. So that's why in this one there's nothing about the past.
I said, well, maybe if it's a colorful story or you know, something that was good that happened to me. There is one negative one in here. People like, I don't like it. It's about she spoke of paradise and angels guest. I don't like that one. Because I'm,
you see, I opened it just like that.
Yeah. I talk about that. My husband liked that poem. The reason why I don't like it is because I'm speaking the truth there and it's discrimination. That's what I'm talking about right there.
Yeah, I understand.
Yes.
Why do you think it's a negative one?
It's a negative
because discrimination is negative.
Yeah,
yeah, but it's true though.
Yeah, it is true. Yeah, but
she is a teacher.
I was going to write about the residential school. This has happened at
this
residential
is a teacher.
School.
Huh?
Yeah,
that's what I thought. Yeah.
CBC contacted me a while back, a couple of weeks ago, and they were going to do
something on residential
school.
School.
Yeah, and. Somebody had told this lady that I was in the residential school. Right away I told her, if I do go on the air about the residential school, it will not be negative. It will be positive.
Yeah.
And how, you know, some of my people say, how can it be positive? Because all these experiences, bad experiences that you have had, huh? I know all my life I had a lot of bad experiences, but I always look on the good side of life, you know. One time, one of my people made a critical assessment of my work, and he said, she doesn't know what she's talking about. What did he say now? She looks at life through rose-colored glasses and
mm-hmm.
all that stuff. And, oh boy, Dr. Marie Battist, she was this Marie Battist. She's the, what is she now, curriculum director here now? Oh, she had a high position anyway, Dr. Marie.
Mm-hmm.
You have never met her?
No.
Oh, well, she's very good. Well, she was up University of California, and she read this
mm-hmm.
note, and she read about me, and way back she has admired my work, so she blasted that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And a month later, my husband and I happened to walk into the Micmac News, and my husband is big, he's 5'11",
mm-hmm.
he's
mm-hmm.
big, more
mm-hmm.
muscular. And he meets this guy, this fellow was standing there.
The one who'd written that?
Yeah. Uh-huh. He said, oh, you said something unpleasant about my wife a month ago, like that, and went on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy had a black guy, you know, he happened to have a black guy. And Roy, the editor of the Micmac News, jumped out and said, Frank, like that, you know, talking
mm-hmm.
Micmac. And Frank, of course, was teasing. He
yeah,
was not
yeah.
mean, you know.
Yeah.
So, where did you get the black guy? Told that guy, yeah? And that fellow said, oh, I got into a fight in Newfoundland. He was up at a conference up there somewhere. And yeah, I guess he took somebody's girl or something.
Oh,
you know? I don't
yeah.
know what the story was.
Maybe
but,
he wrote another review.
Yeah. But I looked at him and I laughed. I said, I have friends up in Newfoundland too. And we had a big laugh out of that.
Oh, that's good.
And that man, you know, he's a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
He's today, after I told him one time, about a year later, I met him on the street, and I said, I'm working on a book about residential school. And he had written a manuscript about a year before that, a year or 2 years before that. It was not accepted by any publisher.
Mm-hmm.
No publisher wanted to touch it. It was too... Well, you're speaking against nonsense priests. And,
mm-hmm.
and that was back in the 60s. So when a couple of years later, I told this fellow, the same fellow, I am writing a book on residential school. So he said, I'll give you all my pictures that I have. And I told him, Conrad is his name, huh? Conrad, I said, the book I'm writing is positive. It's not, nothing
mm-hmm.
negative.
Mm-hmm.
When I told my sister-in-law about
mm-hmm.
it, the positive part, working the book, she said, boy, you're going to have a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. She says, you're going to have a hard time.
Did he ever get his book published, like Conrad?
No.
Maybe
they still have it. I told
maybe
him.
There's a chance
wait,
now
yeah.
with all these investigations coming up,
yeah,
and people
yeah.
want to.
I told him, hold on to it.
And I
hold
think,
on to it.
I think. Well, I'm an outsider. Maybe I shouldn't. Well, no. I think it should be documented.
Your thoughts are important.
I think it should be documented.
Yeah.
Because if you see some of the. Well, in Regina, the population officially, I think there are about 6 or 8% Indians, but really they're about 20%, 25%. There's so much racism going on, and there's so many people out on the street, and there's so much violence and misery and alcohol. And you wonder how come, also in the families, in the native families, people really hurting each other or
mm-hmm.
abandoning
mm-hmm.
their children or buying booze and they're going hungry and all these
yeah.
really bad things. And then when I talked to so many people, I once did a book on with interviews also, this was 10 years ago, people talking about boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
And you think of it, for two, sometimes three generations, people the family's being broken up,
mm-hmm.
and they don't even learn, some of the kids, that their mm-hmm. parents love mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. What do you expect them to do when they're parents? So I think some of the problems, or a lot of the problems that we see today,
mm-hmm.
are really the result of the residential schools, and that must never happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know, that's how
yeah,
I see
well,
it.
Yeah, well, some of it, some of it.
Yeah, some
but
of it.
The
I
other,
mean, some of the people
let,
pull
let,
through and stay
let
straight.
Me tell you about the positive part that mm-hmm. I have mm-hmm. tried to research. The positive part of a residential school, and I will say that across the nation,
mm-hmm.
the positive part was the people that came from the good ones,
mm-hmm.
they had a lot, they learned a lot from
mm-hmm.
that,
mm-hmm.
and they have, so many people have gone on and they have become, there's a lot of them that are chiefs, counselors,
mm-hmm.
and social work, and they went on to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these people here in the community, my own husband went back to school because
mm-hmm.
of the negative experience he had when he was a little boy there, and he didn't want to happen, you know, that's why he went into social
mm-hmm.
work. So the motivations and some of the feelings that they had about being in that negative environment,
yeah.
more positive for them, that's what I feel,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's
mm-hmm.
what I feel. I have to, I try to brainwash my husband about that part. 35 years we worked together. He was always speaking about that place negatively, all through the years, and I did too. But talking, I have found out when you write something
mm-hmm.
down, your frustrations, when you are frustrated, when you are trying to analyze what it is that you are talking about
mm-hmm.
in your writings, it makes you feel better. But again, I look at that 10 years later, what I have written, sit down and rewrite it again.
Mm-hmm.
And the positive part comes out.
Mm-hmm.
I received calls about
pieces?
That aged structure,
mm-hmm.
that building.
Yeah.
It stood there for the people to see, especially Schopenhagen, where it
mm-hmm.
is. They went by every time they saw that building, the hate would feel, they
mm-hmm.
would feel the anger. And after a while, there were some people that would drink there. They had this mattress and they would
mm-hmm.
drink there. And I imagine that's how, and I know a woman that wrote a book, historical part of our, she wrote the book, the Europeans finding us, and then
mm-hmm.
Things, and then that part she did about the residential school.
Yeah.
We used to have children, there were so many children, over 100 girls and over 100 boys. Our children, we had, excuse me, we had spiritual encounters of unusual
mm-hmm.
things happened on that that school that we tried to tell the sisters. And I'll give you an instance of one. I called it Sticks in the Night. I didn't know. I wrote the story, Sticks in the Night. Well, during the day, during summer months, I heard the girls talking about this sound they hear in the night. And I even asked the elderly man here what it could possibly be, and he talked about some kind of a bug that made that sound.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, this was not a bug. It was like if you took two sticks
mm-hmm.
and it had a nice sound,
mm-hmm.
like you were drumming,
mm-hmm.
but there were two sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounded like that. Well, I heard women, girls talking about it, and I never wake up during the night, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when I sleep right
mm-hmm.
through. But one night I woke up about 3 or 4 in the morning.
Yes.
And I was laying there, and I did hear them.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I could not describe them any other way but two sticks,
mm-hmm.
somebody playing with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a nice tune to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they would go
off. Mm-hmm. And then they fade. Mm-hmm. Then they come back again. Mm-hmm. Just like marching. I don't mm-hmm. know how in the world to describe mm-hmm. it. I was too petrified. I put mm-hmm. the blanket over my head and I tried to shut out the sound and I couldn't. And I kept hearing. Oh, boy, I never fade away. Finally, I fall asleep. And then I, next day, I told the girls, the older ones, we talk, huh? We talk about our experiences. And I heard those damn things you people were talking about. And then I was trying to analyze them today. Was it the power of suggestion? Mm-hmm. But how can you hear this sound, power of suggestion?
Well.
Oh, okay.
Hopefully.
That does this. I'll tell you about one experience I had. So many, many years ago, when I first wrote this book that just come out, I don't know if it came out yet, but I met a journalist in Antigonish. We had gone to the same funeral, and that was his friend that died, this Indian. And this non-Indian guy, he was curious about what Indian people do. But we all went to church, and I was standing there outside. It was warm, so my brother had spoken to this journalist and told him about me doing the writing sometimes, mm-hmm. you know. I don't think the book had come out yet. But I remember the man coming to me and he asked me, now what do we do? Coming from the church, then we go to a burial and the observance of the traditional hymn that was sung when it lowered into the ground. Mm-hmm. Now that hymn, we were not doing it for a while until it was revived by one of the priests here came and told us, you know, mm-hmm. do what you have always done. Bring out your customs, you know, mm-hmm. this particular priest so many years ago, 15, 20 years ago. So I remember they revived that hymn, you know, and I even have a portion mm-hmm. of it I sing mm-hmm. when I'm mm-hmm. telling the story. Now, that journalist, I said, well, see what we do. Just look and observe and mm-hmm. see what we do. Then, after the burial, then we go to a community hall or someplace mm-hmm. and food is served. Mm-hmm. And then, now what do? He says, sitting over there somewhere. And I says, see what they'll do. There's auction going on. Mm-hmm. So they did sit up the table outside and people brought things and put them on their table. Or maybe I took a set of dishes or flower pot or something, you know. People bringing all sorts of things. Then the auction was held. And it just takes long, 5 or 6 hours. Mm-hmm. It takes a long time. Huh? And he came over to me, he stood alongside of me. He said, I'm going to leave. But he said, I'm going to do a story for the casket. Do you mind if I write about my friend? Mm-hmm. He's dying and being my friend. And this part of it, he said, do you mind? Will your people mind? Mm-hmm. He said, no. Yeah. I said, write about what you want. And if you want to need any information, call me up. I gave him my phone number. But I said, that part, he said, I don't know how much money will come in, but I said, well, phone somebody in the community tomorrow, they'll tell mm-hmm. you. And he phoned me about a week later, mm-hmm. That man, and he said 1,100 was raised that day. And I said, well, you did your story. He said, yes. He said, that's the first time I've seen what happened mm-hmm. in the community. And then I wrote it for the book. I wrote that part because I've seen it so often done in the community here, mm-hmm. that the, you know, I'll tell you about my experience. When my husband died, he used to be an auctioneer at the mm-hmm. hall a lot, mm-hmm. huh? So when he died, I was thinking, even to myself, I was thinking, Now I will experience it firsthand, what I have seen happening. Huh? So other people auctioneer at the time, my husband auctioned. Huh? 4,200 was raised that day. I paid off all our bills and I paid the funeral expense. Even the home bill, I paid off all in the headstone, beautiful headstone. So that's the beautiful part of that custom that I am so proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And then I look at the people, the sorrowing people. Me, I was sad when he died. Oh, I was broken hearted.